We'll take the case under advisement. And we will move on to the fourth case for this morning, United States against Michael Riley.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Rose Lindsay for Michael Riley. Your Honors, Mr. Riley went before the district court for sentencing after he had committed a bank robbery when, during the robbery, he was under what he described as an alcohol-induced blackout.
I'm surprised he wasn't dead from the amount of alcohol that this record shows he consumed.
Yes. As the record makes very clear, he suffered severe alcoholism his entire life. He's now 53 years old. At the time of the offense, he was 52. The district court considered his, how she described it, his checkered past with 52 misdemeanor offenses, all tied directly to his alcoholism and his petty thefts and all of those things. We came before the district court and we presented arguments based on the fact that he qualified for the career offender enhancement. And we presented arguments to the district court focusing specifically on Mr. Riley's severe alcoholism, and we asked the court to consider whether the career offender enhancement in his particular case was excessive.
But here's what mystifies me a little bit about your position. You are assuming that the kind of treatment he would be eligible for in the confines of BOP, some appropriate federal prison, is automatically going to be less suitable for him than the kind of treatment he would get out on supervised release or perhaps even beyond. And I have to say, I don't see a thing in Mr. Riley's background to suggest that he's going to make it on supervised release. He certainly never has before. He doesn't show up to things. He goes, oh, he's got a real problem. I mean, nobody can disagree with that. But the district court, I think, thought that actually the structure of being in the prison and the fact that a good half of the federal prisons do have substantial programs in this area is very likely to be the best thing for him.
I can see how the district court could have inferred that from the record. However, our position was not exactly as Your Honor described. We were not necessarily saying that the prison would not provide a suitable type of treatment. We were simply asking the court to consider whether the length of sentence, 151 months, adequately addressed the underlying basis for all of that criminal past, because all of his criminal history is directly tied to his problem. So our argument was
he's been a menace to the community because of his problem, hasn't he?
The district court seemed to think that that was a concern, yes.
Robbing banks is not the friendliest thing to do. I mean, it's frightening for the tellers involved. It's obviously economically bad for the bank. I mean, he's
absolutely, and I certainly couldn't deny that. But the problem that we encountered with the district court is that in presenting these non-frivolous sentencing arguments and following how Rita lays out how a district court needs to at least reason through that the decision, we walked away from a sentence of 151 months without a clear sense as to where that came from, because the district court focused uniquely on Mr. Riley's criminal past and said nothing about our argument, which we based on this court's decision in United States versus Miranda, which was a similar situation. We asked the court to consider the underlying causes of all of his criminal past and whether that the mental health issues and the severe alcoholism created a sense that just incapacitation alone was not a fair enough balance of all the different sentencing factors.
The district court addressed that point. The district court acknowledges the alcoholism.
Yes.
And the district court isn't saying we're just going to put this guy in a cage for 151 months. She's saying I'm going to make a strong recommendation for treatment. I mean, I feel as though she may not be addressing your concern the way you would have preferred, but I thought she was trying to incorporate that in her sentence.
And in fact, didn't she continue the sentencing for a week or so to get some more information about the eligibility that he might have for inpatient or alcohol treatment while he's incarcerated?
Yes, she did. She continued it for specifically that reason. She wanted to clarify, as I had raised in the initial hearing, she wanted me to confirm that he would not be guaranteed a spot in that program. And that was confirmed by a Bureau of Prisons official. So we were able to help the court understand that though there is a possibility he could get into the program in the Bureau of Prisons, there's absolutely no guarantee. But the court then stood on her originally imposed sentence, and that didn't change her the outcome.
Now, do you think the court had no discretion to consider the alternative that I was laying out a minute ago, that if he, suppose he had a, you know, 100-month sentence instead of 151 months or something like that, that means presumably he'd be out on supervised release and getting what kind of treatment? This is a man with a very serious problem. He's been in prisons before, and he presumably dries out when he's in prison. I don't know what the alcohol accessibility is there, and yet he can't stay away from it.
Right. To address Your Honor's question, I don't think there was any indication in the district court's imposition of sentence that she didn't feel she had discretion to do something other than the guidelines. That wasn't a concern. Our concern was that there was no clear explanation, as Rita requires, when we present these non-frivolous arguments about the basis, the underlying drive for all of this criminal history, and her sentence is based entirely on that criminal past. We got no explanation. She said nothing to us about the appropriateness of the career offender enhancement. She said nothing about the evaluation that we submitted, and even asked a question suggesting that she probably didn't even read it. We don't know that. And so we walked away not knowing if the judge had adequately considered all of our arguments. Had she simply said, I've considered the reports, I've weighed all of these different sentencing factors, I'm considering that under Section 3553A1, the low end of the guidelines would be sufficient but not greater than necessary, or something along those lines, but we walked away with literally nothing other than an acknowledgement that he needs treatment, an acknowledgement of his alcoholism, and a simple statement that you need to be punished for your criminal past. It didn't leave us with a clear enough explanation that Rita requires, and I see that as putting us really in line with the Miranda case, a real similar scenario there, where this court said that in Miranda, the district court did not sufficiently explain or address the issues related to the mental health concerns of that particular defendant. So there was an inadequate explanation where we cannot say for sure that our non-frivolous sentencing arguments were adequately addressed.
Okay. Do you want to save any rebuttal time? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Trivedi? Please.
The court. Good morning, Kruthi Trivedi on behalf of the United States. The district court in this case properly imposed a reasonable sentence at the low end of the advisory guidelines range and provided adequate explanation to support that decision. In doing so, the district court considered all the arguments raised by the defendant that had legal and factual merit.
I have a question for you, Ms. Trivedi. I mean, I'm sure that the PSR went into many of the factors that Ms. Lindsay was talking about in greater detail, but the district judge in this instance doesn't seem to have uttered the magic words, you know, I've looked at the PSR and I'm adopting its findings except insofar as I may say something a little bit different right now. Wouldn't it save a lot of these procedural appeals if the government were attentive to to whether that sentence has been uttered or not? I mean, we do need something to review at this court, because otherwise the whole system really does seem like a waste of time. And when we don't have these further explanations, then we are left to speculate. Is this the one case out of X in which the further explanation would have caused the district judge to say, gee, you know, I actually hadn't thought about factor such and such enough, and maybe I would change my mind? Now, we may sit here and think, well, she probably wouldn't have changed her mind in Mr. Riley's case. I don't know. You know, but she doesn't give as much of an explanation. And yet we've said when a district court says, I'm accepting the PSR, that pretty much does it.
I think it's always helpful for the district court to say that, and it would be helpful to flag it, perhaps, for the district court.
The party with an interest in stability of the sentence, it seems to me, is the U.S. Attorney's Office. I'm sure you love coming here, but it's probably even easier for you to devote your resources somewhere else.
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, it did appear that the district court had reviewed the PSR. She'd asked about the PSR. There were questions about it.
She makes then this troublesome statement that, you know, was anything filed? And then it does sound like she didn't read some of the material that had been presented to her.
Your Honor, that's one inference with respect to Dr. Field's report, and I think the defense had talked about that. She asks, was the
other inference from her statement? She doesn't even know that something was filed.
Well, Your Honor, there's nothing in the record to suggest that after the defense says, yes, Your Honor, I filed that report, the district court isn't surprised, is shocked. It's just rather, you know, was there a report filed in this case? Yes, Judge, there was. I attached it to the sentencing memorandum. And then the parties go on and talk about the report and talk about what happened with respect to Mr. Field's recommendations. They're extensively discussed, both by the defense and by the government. And the judge talks about his alcoholism as well, and talks about how he has a major problem. And so the report is there. It is talked about. You're correct. There's nothing in the record where the judge says, oh, yes, I certainly read that report. And there's also nothing in the record that says, what are you talking about? What report? Hold your horses. So it's she asks the question, she gets an answer, and then the parties talk about the report at length, extensively.
Isn't there a part of the judgment commitment form that's filled out that indicates whether the judge accepts the findings of the pre-sentence report? I don't have the one for this case. It's the part that's usually kept under seal.
Your Honor, I'm drawing a blank.
That's right. Well, let's assume for the moment there is such a form and there's a box check that says the court adopts the finding of the pre-sentence report, but didn't say anything about it in court. It just checked it on the form. Does that provide the defendant anything that's useful in understanding why the judge reached that result?
I think it does provide the defendant with some sense of security that it wasn't just that the judge hadn't considered anything and went off on a frolic and detour, but rather that the judge had considered the things that in this case she talked about with the defense and the government, and then addressed them, and then when filing that judgment and commitment order, went ahead and checked the box in line with what had happened at the sentencing and in line with what had influenced her thinking. And in this case, with respect to the district court's thinking, we do know that the district court had discussed the defendant's alcoholism at length. She considered his need for treatment, and in fact, she postponed the hearing, not to determine whether or not he was guaranteed treatment, but rather to determine whether or not he would be eligible, able to get the treatment. She was told by the defense that that the defendant would likely be eligible, and that the BOP was capable of providing that sort of treatment that he required.
But I guess only half the prisons really have the kind of program he would need.
And the defense stated that he was not guaranteed treatment, so that is part of it. But the district court was aware of that, and she elected to resolve that problem by making a strong recommendation, and that's what she did. She did it in the judgment and commitment order. She announced it during the hearing. She made it a strong recommendation, which was what she would do in that circumstance. A district court judge sitting, seeing that the defendant would benefit from this treatment, could make a recommendation, and that's what she did. But she also concluded that the defendant's extensive criminal history, and there are misdemeanors in his criminal history, but there are also significant, serious crimes. If you look at trends toward the later years and more dangerous crimes, he keeps going into places and trying to rob them. At one point, he has a small gun in his hand. He goes to a bank, and then years later, he goes back to that same bank and tries to rob it. So there was plenty with respect to his extensive criminal history that suggested that a deviation below the guidelines range in this case was not necessary, and that, in fact, it was appropriate to sentence the defendant as she did. The district court wasn't required to impose a lower sentence based on the possibility that the defendant would not receive substance abuse treatment while in prison, as the defense seems to suggest. Instead, the court was entitled to consider other 3553A factors, more important, which she did, including the defendant's extensive and escalating criminal history, whatever its cause, and to determine that those factors, on balance, warranted a within-guidelines range sentence. Again, the issue here is clearly on the table about the alcoholism. Everyone is talking about it throughout the hearing. The district court continues the hearing just so she can be assured that he's at least eligible. He's not foreclosed. And when you look at the record and look at the first day of sentencing, she's asking time and time again, wait, so is he not eligible? Are you saying he's not eligible? And then she continues the hearing for authority and hard facts, as she says, on that matter. And when she finds out that he is eligible, that satisfies her. And then she looks at the 3553A factors that really are compelling in this case. The fact that this individual time and time again has committed crimes, and while some of them may have been not the most serious crimes, a lot of them in recent history are very serious crimes. And when she says, looking at your checkered past, you know, I'm concerned, when she says, I haven't seen so many offenses committed by one person in a long time as a district court judge, she's indicating very clearly what she considers is important. It's not unclear at this point. She's saying, here is what is driving my decision. I will make a strong recommendation for you to receive treatment. You've told me you're eligible for it and that it helps to have a recommendation. I'll do exactly that. I'll make a strong recommendation. And that's what she does. So, in short, the district court didn't abuse her discretion when coming up with the sentence in this case, and the government would ask that the sentence be affirmed. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Anything further?
In Rita, the Supreme Court determined that the sentence was reasonable because the record made clear that the court had considered all of the arguments presented, and the record also made clear that all of the supporting information had been considered. In this case, the record does not make that clear with respect to Mr. Riley's sentence. The court simply concluded that based on his checkered past, he needed to be punished. She said nothing to directly respond to our arguments. And again, we walked away without any assurity that she had fully considered all of the underlying mental health and substance abuse issues. And they were significant enough and enduring enough that they needed to be addressed in some fashion. And her analysis of Mr. Riley's condition did not satisfy Rita's standard or this court's standard as set forth in Miranda. So we would ask the court to reconsider her ruling. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.